Brendan O'Connor on RTE Radio 1 with Allcare Pharmacy. Get expert advice from your friendly healthcare team at Allcare Pharmacy, Ireland's largest community pharmacy network.
Okay, time now for the watch list, our look at the best new film and TV releases for the week ahead. And we're joined today by Donald Clark, film correspondent with the Irish Times, and podcaster and presenter Fionnuala Jones. Welcome, guys.
Hi. Hello.
So, Fionnuala, Black Mirror is back, season 7 on Netflix from Thursday. So, either more relevant than ever, or it's been passed out by reality.
Look, do you know what? The last season, I was like, I'm kind of over this, respectfully. I think it had a couple of good swings, and then everything else was a bit meh. I'm kind of pleased to say that this is, I would say, a return to form, even though, as you said, what can Black Mirror do now that doesn't already exist in real life? Very, very good, I have to say. People will be happy to see there's a sequel to USS Callister from a previous season with Kristen Milioti. Incredible performance there. Chris O'Dowd will also feature. We've got Will Poulter, who's featured in previous episodes of Black Mirror, Paul Giamatti. Very good. I think
so
it would just
be a few standout episodes,
yeah,
that people
definitely
will
100%.
Remember.
I think Chris O'Dowd episode in particular, but I think the USS Callister sequel is, you'd be in the edge of your seat. Yeah.
Donald, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I mean, it's had its ups and downs, and there was kind of a feeling that I think after the sort of second or third series after they moved to Netflix that perhaps its time was up. But I don't think so. I think each series has always been one or two that have really stood out. And I think it's the nature of those sort of anthology programs it's going to be hit and miss. That, I mean, if you're kind of come up with a new concept every week, not everyone is going to score. But I still think like the central concept is relevant and is flexible. That notion, the title, I think, is still great. That notion of Black Mirror, which refers to the various screens you have around your house into which you look deep and see only your own despair. That I think that's, I rather like that. But yes, I think it's still got potential. I have not seen any of the episodes yet.
I saw him say, though, he's moved away from dystopia.
Johnny Brooker.
Because we have dystopia now. So I think he's taken a different kind
of... Well, that's an older man's view, isn't it? That you get to a certain point and you think, oh, it's all gone to pot already.
Yeah. Okay, so that's Black Mirror Season 7 on Netflix from Thursday. Fionnuala, Dying for Sex is out now on Disney Plus. There seems to be a lot of chatter and buzz building around this. Am I going to be left out of the cultural conversation if I don't watch this?
You should watch it. It's very funny.
Is it?
It's a lot of fun, despite the premise.
It's a bit
bear
dark,
with me as
right?
I describe. Yeah, exactly. It's based on a podcast of the same name. Molly, played by Michelle Williams, is diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. She's months left to live, and this news kind of galvanizes her to go on this journey of sexual exploration in support. And her friend Nikki is supporting her along the way, played by Jenny Slate.
True story.
It's so funny. Again, you hear that and you're like, and obviously, look, it does get emotional, needless to say, with the logline like that. But their chemistry, Michelle Williams and Jenny Slate, is like, it's unbelievable. They are incredible as friends. It's an exploration of friendship as well. Jenny Slate should be the most famous woman on the planet. That's what I've deduced after watching this, because she's just incredible.
Do we know her from anywhere?
She would have been in This Is Us, Cursed, and she's done a couple of other things. But she's kind of bigger in America, I think. I'm not sure she's the crossover success here.
Okay.
But hopefully this gives it to her. It's very horny, very fun. Exactly what
will
you want.
Will I be laughing or just smiling?
No, you'll be laughing. You
actual
will be laughing.
Laughs. Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's
the first
two
episodes are an absolute riot. And
great.
I was hooked then. So.
And it's all there, yeah?
Yeah, all on Disney
okay.
Plus.
Okay, Dying for Sex, all on Disney Plus right now. Donald, The Change on Channel 4. So this has been kind of one of those kind of slow burnery things that I've only noticed people starting to talk about recently. It's on its second season now. And I think that the second season is finishing up.
Yeah.
It's all on the Channel 4 website. So... kind of a menopausal sitcom. Would you like to mansplain it to us?
Oh, please. I'm dying here.
Well, I'm the right age. I would have to say that, even if I'm not the right gender. But it's a beautiful little show. I mean, and as you say, it's what point does something go beyond being a cult and become sufficiently successful that cult no longer applies? It's probably still at the cult stage at this point. Bridget Christie, who's great, who I was surprised to actually, I've not known much about her until recently, was surprised to discover she is the right age, but apparently she is.
She heads off on a motorbike.
Woman of a certain age, we say, who attains a kind of desperate wisdom in her early 50s when all this hits her, and she is. In a sense, you know, there's something of you say that of Shirley Valentine about it, going all those years back. And like, as in that film, the husband is not any kind of monster. Probably Omar Jalili, who's always great. He's, you know, mildly neglectful and kind of can't see that can't understand the advantage that he casually takes of her. And so she has this revelation at that point, gets on a vintage motorbike, drives off to the Forest of Dean, and settles into a rustic old caravan surrounded by mad eccentrics who worship eels. Now, I like all kinds of things about that. I think the study of menopause is excellent, and there's a wonderful notion where she's trying to reclaim back the time that she has wasted, if that's the word, doing all the little jobs about the house, the small things that have just eaten up, you know, 30 years of her life. But there's also a celebration of a kind of English folk weirdness, the kind of thing.
Oh yeah, I love that. That's a great aesthetic.
Folk horror, Blood and Satan's Claw, and you get there's a great soundtrack with Karen Dalton and Shirley Collins underneath it, and all. So that's as much as that is as vital to its appeal as is addressing the menopause. It's just great.
Okay. Menopause.
Susan Lynch, great sporting role. Loved it.
Great. Okay. The Change on Channel 4. So I think are the last two going out on Tuesday at 10 p.m.
Right.
But then it's all there
Channel 4 website. Free for all. You can watch the whole thing from start.
Fionnuala, you wait a year for a season of Hacks to arrive here. It kind of got delayed somewhere between America and Amazon and Sky. So then two come along at once, because we've just seen season 3 land on Sky, and now season 4 is coming.
Season 4 is coming April 11th. It'll be on Sky and streaming on Now. And look, not a moment too soon, because this, as you said, I think it's kind of bypassed people because of how difficult to access it's been in terms of streaming. This is an incredible show. This has won 9 Emmys. It stars Jean Smart and Hannah Einbinder as this kind of... Jean Smart is this comedian on the circuit, very old school, gets teamed up with this writer who's very new school, a bit weird. And they have this kind of, you know, the odd couple relationship. It's so funny. And like, again, going back to like very good chemistry, the two of them, unbelievable. We're going into this season. At the end of last season, Deborah has gotten this late night show. All her dreams have come true. She's promised Ava, her writer, the role of head writer on the show. But sure, of course, she reneges on it. And it ends up with this like insane tension between them. These opening episodes of this season, season 4, like it's quite dark. It's actually much darker than I would say the previous. Yeah. Episodes have been in terms of their kind of sparring. It's almost like a marriage, and the showrunners have just described it as such as well, but still very funny. And I would say like they're definitely setting this up as a second last, maybe even a last season, with the way the rest of the supporting characters are kind of moving on with their own things as well. This is silly. I cannot believe it took me this long to watch it, because it's so funny.
And the four of them are there now on Sky slash
Sky Now,
so that's Hacks, and that's
season an Easter
4
binge
from Friday. Okay. Donald, so we've seen Last One Laughing Ireland on Prime Video, and now Last One Laughing UK is on Prime Video.
Yeah, it's a funny one. I mentioned this in a state of some puzzlement or caution. First, at the odd news of how the format has been everywhere. I mean, it's not just been, you know, the huge markets like Nigeria and Philippines, it's been smaller markets like Ireland before landing in the UK. Which is a deeply puzzling phenomenon. I can't remember another situation where one of these big format shows went everywhere before it ended up in the UK. Who knows what happens? Who knows what contractual problems?
And it's comedians kind of in a house together.
Yeah, I mean, the format essentially is you have a bunch of comedians gathering kind of a version of the Big Brother style house. So actually, they're only there for 6 hours. You kind of get the impression from the show they're there for days, and they're aware that the only thing that they can't do is laugh once. You get a yellow card, laugh again, and you're out. And I mention this because that strange phenomenon of it being everywhere before it got to the UK, but secondly, because it's been a genuine hit. It memed everywhere on the social media, and thus suggests that this sort of formatted comedy show, not quite a panel show but adjacent to it, actually can succeed on streaming, because they've tried again and again and again and they haven't managed it. They've done it with this. But having said all that, I don't really get it. I mean, you can't fault the cast. They've got Sarah Pascoe, Joe Lycett, Richard Ayoade, Bob Mortimer. But for me, it's far too formatted, too strictly formatted. I felt I'm being about they're being manipulated consistently by the format. And I've just
manipulation
felt,
in television, never.
Yeah, never. Okay. So I don't really get it, but pay no attention to me. People love it. It's a hit. Give it a go.
Okay, last one, Laughing UK on Prime Video. Fionnuala, we won't waste too much time on your friends and neighbours, Apple TV from Friday, John Hamm. It doesn't sound like it's one of Apple TV's kind of, they hit or they miss.
I mean, it's been renewed for a second season already, so what do I know? But I watched the trailer for this and I said, well, this does not look good, and it's kind of not.
Even sounds,
It's John Hamm being John Hamm, created by Jonathan Hopper. He's a hedge fund manager, loses his job, so he decides to start robbing his rich friends to keep up
so
his life.
So it is there. It will be there from
it's
Friday.
It's there. There's better things on Apple TV Plus. I'm not. Okay. Don't waste your time.
Donal, a new Stephen Ray documentary on RT1 on Thursday at 10:15. The Fire in Me Now.
Yes, can't miss this. I don't know Stephen Ray well, but on the few occasions I've met him, I've always found him the most agreeable of men. And unquestionably, I think, one of our best, and I mean this as a real compliment, strangest actors. I can't think of anyone who gets so much from introspection. And just an interesting background. It's from a Protestant Belfast family that was sympathetic to nationalism at Queen's during the turbulent 1960s, helped set up Field Day, and then of course then became a kind of muse to Neil Jordan, and they've got a whole bunch of all kinds of yarns to tell. Well, we should mention as well, one of the great kind of oddities of his career was he was the voice of Gerry Adams during the broadcasting ban of Sinn Féin, so he was quietly everywhere on every news programme for five or six years, whatever that went on. Neil Jordan turns up, Sinead Cusack, Eamon McCann, who's always good value, apparently all turn up on this, so okay, I shall be okay. Not missing that.
Okay, Stephen Ray, The Fire in Me Now, RT1, Thursday at 10:15. So Fionnuala, Stacey Solomon, kind of the corner of my eye, has become this massive phenomenon and brand, and she now has a reality show on BBC One.
On BBC One.
Stacey and Joe, This Is Us.
Herself and husband Josh Wash, This Is Us. Yeah, a behind the scenes look at their life, and it has proved very divisive online by all accounts, which I kind of can't really understand.
Why?
Stacey is so charming and like genuinely very funny, very witty. But this show has kind of revealed that Joe is respectfully a bit useless, and she is the one essentially running the show. I found it very charming. She's continues to be very funny. I love that she's kind of built this brand around being like very accessible. She feels very authentic even after all these years in the spotlight and kind of bopping around from reality show to reality show. I love it. I love a look inside the chaos. If you're not into them, you're not going to like it, respectfully. Yeah. If you're not into these kind of reality shows, not going to be for you. But if you were in any way curious, I would stick it on because it is just very funny to see Joe running around like a headless chicken.
Stacey and Joe, This Is Us on BBC One. Quick bit of cinema. Donald, you're recommending Restless in selected cinemas now.
I'll do two quickly, don't worry. Two good lowish budget or mid-budget British films. Restless, a great British thriller, which is a really simple high concept. Woman, empty nester, noisy neighbours move in, drive her crazy. She then goes demented, builds up brilliantly, great finale. Also, Mr. Burton, I'd mention, which is a kind of origin story for Richard Burton, who originally name was Richard Jenkins and took his name Burton from an inspirational teacher who here is played by Toby Jones. It's really good. And Harry Lautrey.
I love Toby Jones. He's a guy from industry.
Harry Lautrey plays Burton, which is an incredible challenge for any young person, getting that kind of rich valley's voice, and does really well. So they're both recommended, and you know, you might be on the radar both those things. So if you're going to cinema, give one of those or both of those a go.
Okay. So now we asked you to both, and we just have a few minutes left for this, to pick some films, maybe with the Easter holidays coming up. Sometimes we can enjoy watching films we enjoyed as kids with our own kids or introducing them to kids' classics. So we asked you both to pick a few. So Fionnuala, give us your picks.
I went kind of literal with The Rabbit, which I'm not sure if I was meant to, but I picked Zootopia, which is on Disney Plus. It's essentially like this animated buddy cop film. Judy Hopps is this rookie officer in the Zootopia Police Department and then realises there's stuff going on. She's seeing lists.
Oh, I know that one. It's
very
brilliant.
Funny. It's very, very good.
It is, yeah,
and
yeah.
There's a sequel coming out in 2025, so like could be a good, you know, intro to it for again the parents or the kids. I'd also said Freaky Friday, which is on Disney Plus as well. Everyone knows Freaky Friday, body swap comedy, Jamie Lee Curtis, Lindsay Lohan, another sequel coming out later this year.
And it's almost a rite of passage, I think, for mothers and daughters to watch Freaky Friday
together.
Exactly. Like, it is a lovely thing to do.
Look at us represented on screen like this. And then I had Wallace and Gromit.
I feel seen.
I feel so seen. And then again, very literal with The Rabbit, Wallace and Gromit, Curse the Were-Rabbit, which is on Prime. I mean, Wallace and Gromit is just incredible. And I remember I watched this again over Christmas with the new one that had come out, and I was like, yeah, I wonder if it's as good as I remember it being. And it is, thankfully, very funny, just madcap Wallace and Gromit. They started a pest control business, and then sure, of course, there's this mad beast roaming around at night that ends up destroying everyone's
gardens.
Great
villain voice work by Ralph Fiennes.
Oh, so good.
So it's a good into the Wallace and Gromit world for
yeah,
the kids.
I think
okay,
so.
Very good. Donald, I think of you as a kid, and I imagine that you were even then like a little old man. King Kong, 1932.
Even then, he's just raging
about World War II and stuff. You know what I mean? You're kind of an old English gentleman, a major in the
your
home
pipe,
counties.
But instead, like, bubbles yeah, come out.
So, King Kong, 1933, you're saying to freak the kiddies out.
Yeah, I did mention King Kong. Well, actually, you're right. This is a film that I would have enjoyed where I was about 10 or 11 when it was broadcast.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting that you were there in 1933.
No, that's very kind of you. I wouldn't put it past you to me to have a go at that. But no, I mean, I think King Kong is a good film to introduce kids to. It's one of those things that, I mean, it's technically speaking a horror film, but also even if kids are frightened by it, kids love being frightened. And it's one of those things that I have seen an 8-year-old sit down in front of the 1933 version and love it. And I was in a pub once, I remember, about 10 or 15 years ago, 70 years after the film came out, and saw a classic Dublin pub. And the last scene, they flicked over to the last scene by accident, and the entire pub went silent.
King Kong's on the Empire State Building.
The Empire State Building. It's a, you know, it's a terrific film that kind of captivates almost anybody who sees it. In a more obvious kind of kids' direction, I've mentioned My Neighbor Totoro from 1988, the great Studio Ghibli film. One of the fascinating cultural shifts the last 25 years of young people has been how they've turned towards Asia. I mean, we saw scarcely any young people's entertainment from outside Anglophone territories when we were kids, but a generation has grown up on Hayao Miyazaki and is fonder of Totoro, that huge bumbling spirit in this who befriends a young girl, than they are of the perennially irritating Mickey Mouse. So, you know, more power to them for making that cultural shift happen. And I've also mentioned The Princess Bride, which I think
a classic.
There's no one who's going to disagree with it, are they? I mean, this is a film, genuinely a film for everyone, which is a phrase that I use cautiously because that normally means they're hedging their bets. But Rob Reiner's take on William Goldman's fantasy really does have a lot. It's incredibly funny, not least to comic turns from Wallace Shawn, Billy Crystal, Peter Cook. We always forget about. It's got great action, and the young kid in the framing story, I think, is there to echo all the tutting male cynicism that you get from kids whenever this sort of story is put to them.
Okay.
But the romance works as well.
Okay.
But you know what? You're right. The film I remember enjoying most when I was a kid was The Great Escape.
You see, I knew it. Okay, Donald Clark and Fionnuala Jones, thank you so much for that. Loads of great recommendations there.